Hi, it's Candon and the Rebeccas.
Hey.
Hello.
With Tour Guide Tell All, our weekly podcast tells a lot of stories about Washington, D.C. people, but we wanted to talk about some D.C. sites as well. So we're going to bring little bite-sized mini episodes of our favorite hidden sites to visit in Washington, D.C., but like visit later. Don't
Not do right now, please. Social
Stay at home. So D.C. is full of memorials, but one that is both off the beaten path and kind of unexpected, like why you would not expect it to be here in Washington, D.C., is the Titanic Memorial. So we wanted to start with this location as our first mini episode, because in a few days, on April 15th, is the anniversary of the sinking of the Titanic.
108th anniversary, 108th. I think, though, before we talk about it, I'm just going to ask the question. We're all about the same cohort age. How many times did you see the Titanic movie in the movie theater?
In the movie theater?
In the movie theater.
I refuse to answer this on the grounds it might incriminate me.
I like the visual of you leaning into your podcast microphone. I don't mind saying 3 times, which was the most I had seen a movie in the theater at that time in my life.
I think I saw it 3 times. Right.
Yeah.
I saw it many times with like the same group of girls too, as well. But the scene where the smokestack falls.
Yes.
Every single time, that's where I start crying.
I don't, even to this day, if it's on TV, like I'll get sucked into watching it. And I still, like, my heart breaks, even though I know they're all digital little people falling off the boat. It still gets me. So I think if we're going to talk about Titanic, we had to just take a moment and acknowledge the significance of the film as our cultural touchstone.
Now, so this is not going to be relevant for this year, 2020. But for anyone else who is a huge national park nerd, April 15th is the only time once a year that you can go and get a Titanic Memorial stamp in your national park passport.
That is a really good, fun fact.
That is
insider tip.
I don't know that.
The times that I have been to the Titanic Memorial on April 15th, I don't go early enough for any of the events, but there aren't any park rangers there. It's just like it's like tied to the info board and you stamp your passport. So, bite size, why do we have a Titanic, or tell me about the Titanic Memorial here in D.C.
Sure. So, if you happen to have not seen the massive movie, the Titanic is the RMS Titanic, this allegedly unsinkable ship that just a little before midnight on April 14th is going to try to steer around and yet strike an iceberg. This happens about 11:40 p.m. and by 2:40 a.m. on April 15th, it's underwater. So, within 3 hours, this unsinkable ship sinks. More than 1,500 people are killed. One of the biggest tragedies in kind of American or in world history, right? It's this big, huge event, and everybody around the world is upset and moved. And a group formed in Washington, D.C. almost immediately called the Women's Titanic Memorial Association, and they decide that they are going to have a memorial built, and specifically, they want to honor the men who give their life to protect women and children. So although there were certainly women and children killed, unfortunately, as they're evacuating out the Titanic, it's sort of women and children first. And so they wanted to recognize these brave men. So they have a contest to design the memorial.
Because men don't have enough memorials in
true,
Washington.
True, true. They do not.
The other interesting thing, I want to jump in and just say the interesting thing to me about the Titanic is it sort of captures the imagination of the world. It's not only this tragedy and this huge loss of life, but it's this very sort of it's on class lines. If you were in third class, your chance of survival was much, much lower than if you were in first class. This is also the sort of preamble to World War I and sort of very much the end of the good times. And the Titanic is this emotionally symbolic moment where the like Victorian era and the Edwardian era and all of that sort of happy times is going to kind of come to an end just before the First World War, the Great War breaks out about 2 years later.
And for us nerds, right, the fact that they actually hit the iceberg on April 14th, which is the date of Lincoln's assassination, is insane to me to kind of have these two tragedies on the same day. So of course, everybody around the world, right, there's this outpouring of emotion. And and it's decided there's going to be a memorial in Washington, D.C., and they hold a contest for the design. And the design contest is won by Gertrude Vanderbilt Whitney, who I'll talk a little bit more about in a moment. But Vanderbilt and Whitney should be names you've probably heard of. We're talking about a very, very famous, very, very wealthy woman.
Ding, 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 ding.
Yeah, like the Vanderbilt plus Whitney, we're talking about money, money, money. But she's also an artist. She designs this really striking memorial, but the memorial isn't actually finished till 1931. So the contest chooses her design in 1914, but it will take them almost another 16 years to raise the money, get the approval, and actually have the memorial created. The memorial is made out of red granite. It's actually carved out of one solid block of granite. And if you see it, it's sort of striking because it's a male figure, sort of partially clothed. From a distance, though, it almost looks a little otherworldly, like an angel or this sort of allegorical figure, but it is a man with his arms outstretched. And I always think about it as a very protective pose, as though he's sort of holding back others from harm or keeping others out of harm's way. The base and the excedra, which is the architectural recess that surrounds it, was designed by Henry Bacon. That should be a name that should be very familiar to our tour guides. Bacon's last big project would be a few years later, or a few years after he does this, which was the Lincoln Memorial.
I was going to say, can we do like a can I buzz in?
Oh, yeah.
Like,
do you know what his last project was, Rebecca?
What is the Lincoln Memorial?
Yes. So Bacon does a little work on this, this memorial before transitioning over to the Lincoln Memorial.
I really like how Becca has the ability to bring anything around to Lincoln.
I feel like it's her special
gift. It's a gift, truly. Yeah. This is a massive memorial. It's sizable. It's 13 feet tall. Plus it's on this base that's a couple feet tall as well. So it's a really striking memorial. It's dedicated 1931, not where it is today. It was originally dedicated at Rock Creek Park at the base of New Hampshire Avenue. So it was sort of in this beautiful Rock Creek Park area along the Potomac River. And that was really, really great for about 20 years. And then they decided that they were going to build something right down there. Do you know what they built? It's one of my favorite places to go when I get the rare date night.
I don't know.
Camden, right along Potomac River, Rock Creek Park.
The Kennedy Center.
Yes, absolutely. The Kennedy Center. That's totally correct. So the original memorial was along Rock Creek Park, or in Rock Creek Park along the Potomac River. But when it comes time to build the Kennedy Center, they're like, well, shoot, we've got this Titanic memorial in the way. We're just going to pack it up. So they pack it up and it's in storage until 1968. And then they rededicate it without a ceremony or anything. They just kind of set it up in a new location. And that's where it still stands today. So today it is at 4th and P Street Southwest, just a couple blocks from what we call the Wharf. So if the Wharf is one of my favorite parts of Washington, D.C., it's been redeveloped in the last few years. You have the big fish market. You have a lot of great bars. There's a tiki bar that I love in the Wharf. There's a lot of great outdoor space. We had a very fun guide get together where we did a float out of the Wharf down on the water. But if you were to walk a few blocks away from the Wharf, you would see this male figure outstretched, and that is the Titanic Memorial. So it's definitely, I think, off the beaten path. A lot of people drive by or walk by and have no idea what it is. Most people don't stop to look at it closely, but it is really beautiful and really moving. And I have to take a moment to talk about the artist who designs it, Gertrude Vanderbilt Whitney, because she's really fascinating. So she is like Vanderbilt, like the Vanderbilts, like she is the second daughter of Cornelius and Alice. Her great-grandfather is Commodore Cornelius Vanderbilt. So she is money, 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 money to like the nth degree. She is raised with all of that wealth and luxury, and she, like many women of her era, will study in Europe. She goes to Europe and she's in Paris and she falls in love with the art scene. Montparnasse, Montmartre, she is really, really into art and she starts studying sculpting. This is a time when not so many women were studying sculpting. She has people like Rodin who will study and criticize her work. She works with a lot of really well-renowned artists. She wants to be an artist herself, but she's no dummy. She knows that if she tries to be an artist as, you know, Gertrude Vanderbilt, nobody's going to take her seriously. She's the socialite. Everyone's just going to think she's a dilettante, or people won't really give her fair criticism. That's what she's worried about. So she works under a fake name for the first few years of her career. Her first public commission is a piece at the Pan American Exposition in Buffalo, New York. So I'm telling you, all of our podcasts, you start listening to every episode of this podcast, all these things interconnect. So that was her first big public work. Eventually, she gets enough kind of notoriety that she feels that she can sculpt and create art under her own name. She settles back in New York in Greenwich Village, which I'm sure our New York guides can talk all about, all the great artists who will base out of Greenwich Village in this era. And she has her first big solo show in 1916. So she, on her kind of own merits, becomes this respected American artist. Then World War I happens, and she is forever changed by World War I. You're talking about how Titanic was sort of the precursor to that change. World War I will fundamentally change Gertrude as a person. She will go to France. She builds a fully operational field hospital with her own money and oversees the running of this hospital. And while she's there, she sketches these soldiers, these very, very wounded and dying soldiers. And she starts sketching them knowing that when the war is over, she wants to create memorials to these men who have sacrificed so much. And that's what she does. If you go to New York City in Washington Heights, they have a war memorial that was designed by Gertrude Vanderbilt, now Vanderbilt Whitney at this point. And it was based on these sketches she did in the field hospital. And her work really changes after the war. So the Titanic Memorial is done before that period, before World War I. But after World War I, she starts getting much more, I think, abstract Vanderbilt Whitney. My favorite thing about Gertrude, though, is she was a get-it-done kind of gal. 1929, she owns 700 pieces of modern art because she has been buying art her whole life, and she's been buying directly from artists. She goes to the Metropolitan Museum of Art. She says, hey, I have 700 works of art. I'll give them to you for free, and I'll give you the money to build a new wing onto your museum. And the Met says, no thanks. We don't like your collection. It's too American. We don't really collect American. And it's really too modern. We don't really collect modern. And she's like, well, okay, I'm rich as they come. I'll start my own museum. So she founds the Whitney Museum. She names it after herself because that's what you do. And then what I love is she has her favorite assistant, and she, Juliana is her name, and she makes Juliana the first director of the Whitney. Nice. So then she puts a woman in charge of her museum because the men at the Met didn't have the foresight to see how remarkable her collection was. So Gertrude Vanderbilt Whitney to me is a really fascinating woman. I know we're doing bite-sized history, so I won't go too in-depth, but she's really ahead of her time. She was probably bisexual, if not even perhaps non-binary. She wrote quite a bit as a young woman about wishing she could be a boy and living as a boy. She cross-dressed. She had some really interesting relationships. So I really see her as a woman ahead of her time.
I don't know what we were thinking trying to do bite-sized episodes. And it's just because there are so many fascinating things about DC sites and the people involved with them. And we love talking.
I also think, so as a tour guide, you know, it's easy to look at a place like the Lincoln Memorial or the White House and be like, oh, there's so much to say. Or you're the average tourist and you see it and you're like, this is going to have an amazing story. But even these smaller, maybe less notable or less impressive in their scale memorials often have really incredible stories. We can get to a whole podcast about kind of public memory and what these memorials mean to us as Americans and as community members, but especially in this era, this golden era of memorials, which is sort of this late 19th century, early 20th century. It was so important that these events be remembered, like the Titanic and that sacrifice and that heroism. So even though it's a very unassuming spot today, it meant so much when they were creating it. And the people involved took it very, very seriously.
And we should say, if you are interested in visiting the Titanic Memorial and learning more about it, but also the environs and what else you can see there, when we are all allowed to leave our houses, Dan leads an excellent tour of the wharf, and there is so much fascinating history down there. I know Becca talked about what a great area it is just to hang out and grab some food and stuff. And so many locals probably are very familiar with the concert venues and the restaurants at the wharf, but they don't realize all of the history that they're walking by. So we will be offering small group wharf tours when this is all over. And we can show you the Titanic Memorial in person.
I forgot to mention too, she had a brother who was on the Lusitania.
Yes, she did. That's right.
Vanderbilt Whitney. And there were like several Vanderbilts who were supposed to be on the Titanic, like cousins and uncles and other things, all of whom ended up not taking that ship. Really,
I love how intertwined history is.
My hope is that truly people listen to every one of these podcasts, the big episodes, the shorter, quick-ish or bites, and starts to realize though that there are themes and connections, and most of these things don't happen in a vacuum.
And also that Becca can link into anything.
It is a skill.
I really can.
Tour Guide Tell All is created and produced socially distant in our respective basements and living rooms straight from Washington, D.C. If you want to support us, please subscribe to our podcast so you'll get alerts when we release new episodes. Give us 5 stars on any and all podcast apps. Find us on social media at Free Tours by Foot and Free Tours by Foot HQ on Facebook and YouTube. But the best way to support us is to give us your money. We want to give a special thanks to our patrons, and you can be one too, by signing up to our Patreon page in the show notes. You'll get early access to podcasts and YouTube videos, tell us who you want us to talk about, and at some levels, get to call in live and listen to us record an episode. So until next week...